Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their careers. This week, you will be hearing a conversation I had with Megan Waters, Corporate Development Vice President of New Ventures and Strategic Alliances at LabCorp. Megan, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I guess it starts probably college time frame. I was a biomedical engineer in college, and the summers I would intern or work, I guess, in the tissue engineering lab, looking at how to tissue engineer heart arteries. And that lab actually spun out a company that's called Humacyte, actually now a publicly traded company in the RTP, Raleigh-Durham area of North Carolina. And so I got some early experience in kind of early lab work, early science, how a PI at a university might start a new startup company. And then obviously I was still very much science driven. I was always more of a math and science person in general. And so I started talking to a couple people, and one of my friend's brothers was working in kind of a corporate development, business development role at a big pharma company at the time. And I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to be on the business and strategy side of new technology. So I went back to school and focused on strategy and health sector management when I was in business school. And my first job out of business school is actually at LabCorp. So I've been at LabCorp now for almost 14 years. And when I joined LabCorp, it was because I told my colleague, John Meltzer, who hired me, that's what I wanted to do. And we have a rotational program called the Leadership Development Program at LabCorp for MBAs. And the point is to rotate and learn about different groups across the company. But I never ended up rotating. So, you know, I joined John's team, and it was the licensing team at the time. But what we were seeing at that time, it was 2011, 2012, 2013 timeframe, was a lot of things that were changing, at least in the healthcare landscape, and definitely things that were changing with respect to diagnostic. So there was a couple patent decisions. People might have heard of Myriad patent decision that has to do with BRCA testing. Another one called Prometheus decision, which really impacted how diagnostic companies were thinking about IP and patents and licensing. In addition to that, there was a lot of really new technology. When you think about when sequencing was actually getting to a place where it was more affordable, and some of the technology and the AI was starting to be able to do some of the computational bioinformatics work kind of in that time frame as well. Long story short, we stopped doing straightforward licensing, straightforward acquisitions, and we're looking for ways to be more upstream. So like, how could we do some sponsored research, for instance? And maybe if we were to sponsor some additional research or generate some additional data with a partner or academic institution, we'd have some sort of option to internalize it or take a license. But we were taking a more risk-averse, tranched approach to all of this novel technology. And at the same time, there was a lot of things happening in technology in general, and I think health tech and now what we call digital health, that we knew would impact either LabCorp or LabCorp's customers. And customers can be consumers, patients, providers, health systems and hospitals, payers and pharma. So we know that at some point these technologies are going to impact us directly or indirectly, and it's moving very quickly. And so that was why we started thinking, okay, in addition to sponsoring this research with some of these partners, how can we also keep an eye on some of this novel technology that we really considered strategic, but also adjacent and not really necessarily our core business at the time. And so we were thinking through different deal structures and different ways to keep an eye on technology. And that's when we started making equity investments in started what is now LabCorp Venture Fund.
Very nice. And so the adjacency was part of the mission for that new corporate VC.
It definitely was, yeah.
How did you pitch it? Or was it someone saying we should do it, or you pitched it?
Yeah, it was the gentleman I mentioned previously and I that pitched it to our CEO at the time. And he had been the head of corporate development several years prior to that and had a legal background, was really interested in kind of deals in general as well. So at the time, it was actually a pretty easy sell. That has been something that I think we have been very lucky to have is that we have always had an executive committee and executive leadership team that has been really supportive of the venture fund and our strategy. Also, because the EC is our IC, our investment committee, they were always so intimately involved that I think they thought because they were involved, it was something that they were doing too. And it's so much fun to talk about new, exciting technology. So I think a lot of our IC also think it's kind of a break from the usual grind a little bit as well.
It's more exciting. It's about the future building.
Yeah.
But EC is IC. It must be a big investment committee then.
We have actually our IC is bigger than our EC. So yes, it is. It is a big committee. And that's okay with us. It's pretty cross-functional. The EC is comprised of what everyone's probably EC is. And we have our IT, our chief information officer, our chief marketing officer, chief medical officer, chief scientific officer, CFO and CLO, CEO. But then there is those senior SVP leaderships that are specialists in their area, or head of M&A, for instance, that we also think is important to have around the table when we're having these discussions.
But that's not easy to get so many people around the table every time you want an investment proposal. So do you do it on a regular cadence?
Yes.
Or do you do it? Okay.
Yes, we start every year, probably in the November timeframe, looking at first our CEO and CFO schedule, and then scheduling around that.
Okay. But that was like more of a every 2 months, every three
Sorry,
months?
Sorry, every month.
Every month. Okay.
And sometimes we use it, sometimes we don't. But we like to have at least a monthly meeting.
I think that's the key, which is if you have nothing to propose, you don't need to have it, which means you keep your meetings really exciting because that's only when you have something to propose.
Yes.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Although we're getting to the point where there's less cancellations, and it's not necessarily only new investments, but follow-ons or insights, conversations like that.
Okay. But that still keeps them exciting and interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about follow investments afterwards, but maybe you can talk about how do you go about sourcing good investments and bringing that superpower from LabCorp to your portfolio companies.
Yeah. My team's actually called New Ventures and Strategic Alliances. So we're responsible for bringing new science, technology, and innovation to LabCorp through partnership. So we're actually managing anything from sponsored research agreements, evaluations of new technologies or platforms, commercial collaborations, maybe co-development partnerships, licensing, in addition to equity investments. And so the way that we're set up is to be super flexible, to be able to do whatever partnership is mutually beneficial and makes sense for both parties. And what we've seen over the years too is that we used to talk a lot to the tech transfer offices at these universities, and we still do, but they've gotten really savvy about starting new companies. And so I think we did start the venture fund at the right time because that is our best way of being able to fund early research and early stage technology into these companies that they're spinning out, where we would have maybe in the past done something like a sponsored research agreement with an option to license. So anyway, we're set up to be very flexible. And then we also work with all of our expertise across the company. We actually have, I think it's roughly 50, what we call business advisory teams. And these are comprised of our senior experts across an area of science or technology or medicine. Some of them are more ad hoc, but that is a way to bring those leadership sets, science, technical experts, medical experts, business owners, marketing sales leaders, legal, our team together to really think about where are their unmet needs? What are we developing internally? We have a huge R&D group. What is in the pipeline? What are we developing? Do we need to do freedom to operate searches? Do we have the freedom to operate? Do we need a license? And then also in addition to looking at where we think there's unmet needs based on either standard of care or what we're seeing competitors doing, for instance, we're also looking at where there could be opportunities based on trends that we're seeing in the industry. In addition to that, we also work very closely with other venture funds and spend time like quarterly. We have standing quarterly calls with probably, I think it's like 20 to 30 venture funds that are also in healthcare and interested in investing in the same types of companies that we are. So we do a lot of deal flow sharing there at those meetings, even like diligence insights, especially if we regularly co-invest with a lot of those. venture funds, and then, of course, like investment bankers. We benefit from being LabCorp too.
So I think there is one golden nugget you already mentioned, which is this regular meetings with other potential co-investors or already co-invested in the past. Is that something you drove? How did that happen? Because that's very powerful when you can bring syndicate players together with you for an investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we are strategic minority investors. So we don't lead. And so it is very important for us to know, I think, other potential lead investors and co-investors. And when we started the fund around 2012 is really when we started tracking this as an actual fund. We did make some investments into funds, about five of them. We were very careful about who we selected, just based on, again, areas of interest in the areas that they were investing in. And then we, you know, meetings with funds obviously started with the ones that we were LPs in. But our IC very quickly decided we don't want to do too much indirect investing. We would really like to reserve capital for direct investing. And so sometimes those conversations were difficult with funds that are raising money, and they were regularly coming to us knowing that we were in some of these other funds.
So it sounds like the fund of fund could be a really good way to onboard, to learn the job, to start to have a lot of investment opportunities coming to them.
Yeah.
Now I want to talk about your network of advisors, clearly very helpful for assessing opportunities. Yeah. How do you leverage that network of advisors potentially for helping your portfolio companies?
So with over 60% of our active portfolio, we actually have some sort of other formal agreement in place. So if it is an earlier stage company or technology, it might look like something like a pilot study or an evaluation, or maybe we are doing a clinical study and generating data for them or together for publication or a poster at a conference. As they are more later stage and thinking about commercialization or actually have something commercially available, we are talking to them about promotional opportunities or co-promotional opportunities and other kind of commercial collaborations. In addition to them helping with the diligence, they're also helping with these partnerships and have very active roles in these partnerships, whether it's, again, like the early stage R&D people maybe, or if it's later stage business owners, sales and marketing. In addition to that, we require a board observer role. And we have 55 active portfolio companies. Not all of them have a board observer because some of them are very old, but we saw pretty quickly that in the companies that we didn't have a board observer, we just didn't really hear much from them, especially if there wasn't an obvious partnership that was established almost immediately. And obviously, our team can't take every board observer role. So we do tap into that same network of expertise to take these board observer roles.
So in a way, you unlock the value of the mothership, including for the support on the board. And I think it's a golden nugget to actually have a board seat, to be building the intimacy with the company and get the learnings together. But you mentioned observer, so it sounds like it's a design choice to only take observer board seats versus full board seat. Can you talk about the pros and cons and what led to that decision?
Yeah. So I would say for the most part it's pros. You know, especially as a strategic corporate venture fund, we really created the fund for that strategic insight as a number one priority and for working or identifying ways that we can work with the company or partner with the company early on. So knowing that is the point of our fund, the board observer gives us that strategic insight and is that kind of neutral, mutually beneficial relationship without the fiduciary responsibilities. And so our legal team felt very strongly about the board observer versus the board role. I think the only kind of cons are is that we have been investing since 2012. As you can imagine, in some of these situations, we've invested quite a large amount of money and you don't have the same voting rights or decision-making rights as a full board member does. But again, it does just remove that conflict.
Yeah. I think it's even more true for the advisors you mentioned who work full-time in the mothership.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Even more sensitive. And I think it's also good for the entrepreneurs to know that clarity of fiduciary duty does not apply.
Well, that and our team as the corporate development team, even though we call ourselves New Ventures and Strategic Alliances, I think having decisions over exits, for instance, or especially if we might be a potential acquirer, it just gets to be a bit of a conflict.
But in case of an acquisition, I'm sure you, even though you're an observer, you still have to revoke yourself from the discussions related to that.
In most situations, our companies do have closed board sessions at the end of their board meeting. And yep. So if they were talking about something that is under CDA with a competitor of LabCorp, they would certainly ask us not to be there and we would remove ourselves, yeah.
Absolutely. And you mentioned M&A as a potential outcome. How do you think about it and how do you get into the conversation at the right time? Because M&A is really about timing, isn't it?
It is, yes, yeah. And again, because the point of the fund isn't for us to acquire the companies, I think our diligence has evolved, though, as we've become more mature investors to definitely want to understand what we think their exit would be. Who is a realistic acquirer here? I think that comes up in every diligence conversation. And sometimes LabCorp could be an exit or an acquirer. It's just not the point. And we want to make that clear. I think it makes other institutional investors nervous. So I think just having that relationship and being a good partner to them, if there was an opportunity and it made sense for LabCorp, we're already in those conversations. And so that's why I think the board observer matters. We do have side letter language that I know our portfolio company legal teams don't love, but it's evolved over the years, and I think it's important. We never ask for first right of refusal or first right of negotiation. Again, those are terms that make other investors very nervous. But we do ask for notification rights. So just please, we do not want to wake up to a press release that you were acquired and acquired by a competitor. You know, we just feel strongly about something like that. And because we invest in such kind of strategic adjacent spaces, some people might not think that LabCorp would even be interested in acquiring that company, but maybe we are. But then at the same time, if LabCorp was interested and notified, that's just another company that's at the table negotiating and hopefully they can get the best deal.
Yeah. I think the right of first refusal is a problem because it forced a choice of one.
Yes.
And for investors investing, that's definitively limiting the potential for that investment.
Yeah.
I think the notification is actually adding a plus one potentially to a list.
And of course, this legal clause is like this long. So I feel like everybody at first when they see it thinks that it might be some sort of try for first right of negotiation or refusal, but it really isn't. But I do think the notification is where we got comfortable and then also what we think is beneficial to the company.
But that's not an easy conversation at the beginning of the CVC to the mothership. Right. So how do you convince, because the audience would probably have the same challenge where the mothership says, wait, I want the first right of refusal. So how do you convince this is actually not the right way to approach it?
We have a lot of conversations like that. So the IC feels very strongly about us continuing to be in a science first, early stage, strategic minority investor. However, sometimes they do want those rights. Or they'd be like, this seems like a large investment. And I'm like, $5 million in an $80 million round actually isn't
that much.
So we have to manage expectations.
Now, you mentioned about your team being recruited for Science First.
Yes.
And then you report to the CTO. So there is a risk of falling in love with a startup because you're falling in love with the technology.
Yes.
A strong bias.
Yes.
How do you mitigate for that?
Oh, yes. And that was something, I'd say that's probably something we've had to learn the hard way, for sure.
Oh, I feel like there's a golden nugget here.
Well, I mean, yeah. In early days, with that science-first approach, I mean, you're absolutely right. And I think we fell into the same trap that maybe, I'm sure, tech transfer offices in the early days when they were thinking about spinning off IP into newcos as well. Just because you have exciting science doesn't mean it's ever going to be something that is commercially adopted. So it could be a great strategic insight. But at the same time, I think we've become, again, more mature investors. And in diligence, I think some of it is just knowing, right? I think when you're like meeting the leadership team and the management team, just having an understanding of what has now worked in the past and what expertise is necessary. And even if they're a first-time founder or first-time founder CEO, if they know what they don't know and willing to take advice from a different experts and they've identified the right experts, I think that's what we're really looking for. It doesn't have to be a seasoned founder every single time, but it has to be a founder that is going to surround themselves with an excellent cross-functional team.
Now, clearly, all of this, I think it's already challenging when it's inside the CVC, but here you're taking people from the mothership. Do you have a training to make sure that before they go onto the board for the first time, they have the right expectations, they understand how they should behave and all of that? How do you do that?
So we actually do a biannual board observer training. So even the people that have been board observers before or that have been board observers for a while join the meeting. So the first half is the training. And sometimes if there's not a lot of new observers, I won't spend time doing the training and I'll just train someone with the same deck ad hoc. But you're absolutely right. It is important to have that conversation. We also try and make sure we have a fairly tenured person taking the role because this role is representing LabCorp as a whole and not just themselves.
Yep, it's your brand.
Yes, it's our brand. And it's also, we want them to be able to get resources across the company from this contact.
And when there are board observers coming from the mothership, how do you get that inside knowledge back into the mothership in a way where it's respecting confidentiality?
Yeah. So we are still working on that. Not necessarily the confidentiality part. When we start doing diligence with a company and invest in a company, we have a two-way confidentiality agreement between the company and our company. So a lot of times we are not necessarily, like a lot of times our companies are okay with them sharing. Like they know that we're a strategic venture fund, that we want that insight. Mm. We've only had one or two portfolio companies that have asked for a separate CDA between the board observer and the company. And in which case, I mean, we always want to respect the wishes of our companies and those confidentiality agreements. But in general, like they know that they're going to be sharing the board deck with our team and that if they want to talk about something that they think they don't want others at LabCorp knowing, then they should put that in the executive session of their meeting. But like I said, we do have that biannual meeting where we get the observers together and we've been engaging them to share there. But then we've also created this, we don't want to give them too much work. So we've created a couple templates. One is an email template. And so the email template is for if they have a board meeting, like copy and paste this template, you know, forward the deck. And it's just, it's so simple. It's like, what was the main highlight of today or something like that, so that you're sharing the deck and you're sharing while you're in the meeting, kind of what you thought was interesting or what an insight was, or if you want to share all your notes, some of them share all their notes, you know, whatever's easiest for you, but trying to get them into the habit of just forwarding the board deck with their notes, like while they're in the meeting. For those that don't do that, then we like have the actual biannual meetings or we'll ask them to come back to that relevant business advisory team and share any insight, or we'll have them tell us when it would be appropriate for the company to come back and present, which they're always willing to do. So like sometimes it's more, I think it's time, let's have them back. They've got great updates and then they have a much broader audience. And then the last piece is that we've also been trying to get it into kind of like a shareable format. And so for a while we were trying to get the board observers, I mean, some of these are like our chief marketing officer, right? So now what we're doing is we are actually having the CEOs fill out the one pagers. And so they can share what they think their biggest highlight of the quarter was. We also ask for other kind of, they're more like financial metrics that we're tracking just so that we have it all. Are you raising yes or no? Do you want us to share this information with other investors that we're meeting with? How much money have you raised so far? Are you generating revenue? If so, how much? Like some kind of metrics that we're tracking across the portfolio. So we get that updated by them. And then we also get the updates from them on conversations they're having with LabCorp or partnerships, and also their what they would want LabCorp CEO to know about what they achieved this quarter. And I swear they all got it back to us in less than a day.
So, all of them?
Yep.
That's an amazing golden nugget, because It feels like you're making a big ask, but they're all keen to share back.
Yes, but I guess the one of the ways I think we got them to do it quickly was because we said we had an IC meeting coming up. So we did give them a deadline, but we were like, this is going, we are putting this together for our CEO and the rest of the IC. What is it that you would like them to know? And it was one page. Like, the CEO should know these things, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this is the way we're going to do it moving forward, and then have the board observer add anything that they want. But then that way, if we don't hear back from them, we still have an update that we can share.
Megan, it's so good to finish with that golden nugget, but it was a really good learning across everything you've done. And you clearly have a quite unique approach of starting with fund of fund and a network of advisors and the mothership also being on the board. And all of this was quite special. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks.